Captain, we have them. We've established Transporter Lock, the Star Trek podcast. Join Ken and Sabriel each week as they explore strange new episodes, seek out new plots and new characters, and boldly go where no podcast has gone before.
Hello and welcome to Transporter Lock. This week we're talking about a few episodes of Star Trek Picard Season 3. I'm one of your hosts, Captain Sabriel Mastinen, and as usual, I'm joined by Chief Engineer Ken, House of Gagny.
Hi, Sabriel, House of Mastin. How are you?
Going well, and Ken, we have a changing problem.
We do?
maybe I should have made sure you were not a changeling before I said that. Goodbye, everyone. Phaser has pointed at me. I've got to go.
You're really bad at this. Not an intro, it's just that not being a changeling or finding out who is.
Yes.
I just want to see you in the interrogation room. Did you do this thing? Well, he says he didn't do it, so I guess he did.
All right. Yeah. Good. Goodbye. His word.
So before we get into the latest two episodes, and what are the names of those episodes? Remind me.
We have No Win Scenario, which you probably should have reviewed last week to go and burn with the other ones, and Imposters.
Imposters, that's right. So before we get into those, I want to bring up two actors' names. One is a correction to a mistake I made on a previous episode, which went unchecked. I said that Kirstie Alley played...
Mm-hmm. Thought about this.
Yeah. I said that Kirstie Alley played Savik on the first time that character appeared in the original series movies and then was replaced by Kim Cattrall. And that is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is not correct. So we were correct. I was correct that Kirstie Alley played that character, Savik, the first time in Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, and then was replaced by Robin Curtis in the third movie, Search for Spock, and the fourth movie, The Voyage Home. So that character appeared three times, and the last two times were played by Robin Curtis. By comparison, Kim Cattrall did appear in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, also playing a Vulcan.
Also playing an evil Vulcan.
Yes, this is true, because that's kind of the same thing. It's redundant. She was playing Valeris. So she did not play Savik. She did not replace Kim Cattrall. They did both play Vulcans in Star Trek, the original series movies. And my apologies to Robin Curtis for overlooking your contribution to our lore. The other actor I want to mention is... In the last episode that we'd watched, I think it was 17 seconds, there was that criminal who was, as it turned out, a changeling. And you may recall me being aghast that Worf just killed this changeling in cold blood. So I didn't realize that actor was played by Thomas Dekker. Do you know that name?
Not a clue.
So Thomas Dekker appeared in 12 episodes of the TV show Heroes back when it was good. But more important to me is Thomas Dekker was in the Sarah Connor Chronicles as John Connor. So he played John Connor in the show about John Connor.
John Connor.
Yeah. And that was such a good show. I heard, and I don't remember what source I can cite for this, that his character on Heroes was gay and he was written off because he had just been cast as like this super soldier future of humanity, and that people in the audience might have a hard time seeing a recently gay character in that role.
Oh yeah, that'd be so difficult.
Right?
So tough.
Yeah. Now again, I don't have a source for this. It could be the internet, which means it must be true.
I mean, I have never quoted anything like that. Never.
But I like seeing actors I used to love come back, but I always wish that they had the same scale of role that I'm accustomed to seeing them in. Like, he was basically the co-star of the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And now
you wanted him to be the co-star of Star Trek Picard Season 3.
I'm not saying that.
No. We want him to have some gravitas.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be in Star Trek. Like, I would rather he not appear in Star Trek at all if he could get a co-starring role somewhere else. Which is the same reason why he left Heroes, apparently. So, anyway...
I just found out today that Anson Mount was in Crossroads with Britney Spears 20 years ago as the love interest of Britney Spears' character.
That sounds vaguely familiar. I've never seen that movie.
This morning, but I did not see the movie.
I, If it was on Twitter, I didn't see it. I'm not on Twitter anymore. But this seems like something I need to go see now.
I wouldn't have recognized him at all if I wouldn't have just been told that it was him. And they say in the trailer, at the end of it, like, Anson Mount. And I'm like, the only time that really triggers, like, oh, that is him, is they cut away to doing him doing this, his low monotone, like, soft voice thing. Like, oh, that's Anson Mount 20 years ago learning how to do that.
That's amazing. It's so weird to see actors at a very different age. Like, I had never seen a movie that starred Ronald Reagan. And everybody's like, oh, an actor who became a president. So, like, a decade ago, I went and rented one of his early movies from, like, the 1930s, black and white. And I actually didn't recognize him when he came on. Like, there were several actors, and I was like, which one of these is Ronnie Reagan? And I had to actually pause and look it up. I was like, oh, that is him. I can almost see it.
Yeah. The actor?
I know what movies that's from. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme pointing at the screen. I get that.
It's Revenge 1.
All right. Shall we talk TV shows? Shall we talk Star Trek?
Yeah, let's talk Trek.
All right. So season 3, episode 4. Let me actually, one more thing. There's Columbo
just one
again.
More thing.
That's right. Maybe I could say this at the end of this episode of the podcast, but I got to say, the first two seasons of Picard, a little iffy, especially season 2. The middle 6 episodes didn't really do much for me. Picard, season 3, is knocking it out of the effing park. I'm on the edge of my seat. Multiple consecutive episodes, I'm screaming at the television. Sometimes I have this knot in my stomach from all the tension. And it's just, they've kept it up so well. I'm really digging this season.
They're doing a great job, and they sure are getting a lot of use out of that 10 forward set.
Yes. Yes, they are.
We just needed 10 forward.
And we finally got, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, we finally got to see what you had picked up in the outro, which I'm surprised still hasn't moved to the intro, the 10 forward safety off. So almost everything in that is coming true. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, but I was also very wrong about Picard and Riker being up to something. And I was, what else was that? I wrote it down here. There was not a ruse.
Yeah. Can you give us a brief synopsis of episode 4?
No win scenarios where Riker just told Picard, get off the bridge, you just killed us all. And then we restart episode 4 with going, oh, maybe we can have a plan to get out of here. it's basically, this episode is entirely on board the Titan. Save for one scene of them getting out of the nebula. Turns out the nebula is birthing out a bunch of babies. Space babies. Space baby jellies. Beverly figures out the nebula is having contractions. They find a way to use the energy to use that to ride the wave out. At the same time, Seven discovers that there's a changeling on board, and they get the changeling out.
Yeah, this was a tough episode because everybody was so hopeless, and they seemed to have just being utter dismay and despair. Like, they're like, well, let's make the most of our last few hours. Let's get everything off our chests.
Yeah. I mean, Riker, he immediately went from get off my bridge to, all right, Captain, things are Admiral. We're about to die. Go talk to your son. Like, immediately.
I was surprised when Riker said to Picard, you were right before. And he didn't clarify right about what. And I don't know that he necessarily means we should attack from behind, because that still didn't work out.
Probably would have been, maybe attack sooner would have been the right thing you meant, but
yeah, I don't. That's true, maybe.
But ultimately, yeah, that was a really good action-packed episode. It was kind of like the end of like a three-part movie or the opening act.
I was thinking that too. Actually, I was thinking the first 4 episodes, but you're right. Maybe it's just 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, that's what I meant by opening act, or all 4. Just basically, it was one long movie.
Yeah, it was like, let's go to the nebula, get Jack, and get out of the nebula. You know, I feel like that in itself is a self-contained plot. And even in the 5th episode, at one point, Picard was like to Jack, well, now you can go and live your normal life like you were doing before, now that we've saved you. And they're all like, Picard, this isn't over. And he's like, oh, you're right. We have 5 more episodes. What was I thinking? Yeah. But the part of this episode that really got to me, talking about how everybody had just lost hope, was the scene where Riker tries to record a message to Deanna. And I was just, I'm at a point in my life, I don't know why, where almost everything makes me cry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the episode, that was the moment in this episode that did it for me.
We got the answer to like why there's some trouble between Riker and Troy. And it's not necessarily marital trouble, it's that Will's having trouble kind of with this whole losing his son and what's after. And I thought it was kind of a beautiful little thing. I love that. He's like, I've traveled so much of space and nothing has given me any kind of indicator that there's anything after. And we just sat about it.
Yeah. It's been at least, I would estimate, 3 years since they lost their son. That's not something you really get over in 3 years. And we have seen so many amazing things on a Star Trek, including, for example, the wormhole aliens, the prophets. And for Riker to still say that there's nothing after life, I have no reason to doubt him based on his experiences, but it's also sad that he hasn't found anything like that. Well, maybe it's not sad. You know, I mean, if you're atheist, like some people might describe me as, but I'm just surprised he hasn't seen something.
I mean, how many times they've had fake gods?
This is true.
You got the Bajorans here saying the celestial temple here. You know, the thing when Starfleet calls them the wormhole aliens, like you just did even.
Yep.
Yeah, lots of things that aren't necessarily showing an afterlife.
This is true. You bring up a good point. Even the Next Generation found that woman posing as the devil come to claim her contract with this planet of after 100 years of peace and prosperity or whatever. And I love the end where Picard was like, I don't like this earthquake. I'll make it stop. And he snaps his fingers and it stops. Yeah, you're right. There are more false gods than real gods on Star Trek.
I mean, we even had a bunch of them appear on original series.
Yes, quite a few.
Along with Nazi Planet and Mobster Planet. And
and also, when you can have somebody like Q, and what is a god if not a Q?
Yeah.
Who knows? So, there was a lot going on in this episode. Picard went to 10 forward with Jack. He had his own heart-to-heart, just like Riker had with Deanna, or tried to. This is not the point of the scene, but I couldn't help but notice, as Picard was behind the bar pouring a drink, there was a framed photograph in the background of an Andorian in a red uniform. Is that supposed to be anybody that we know?
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Nothing really.
Yeah, our favorite Andorian from Strange New Worlds, he wore blue, correct?
I know, he was engineering red.
Red. Okay, I couldn't remember. It's only been a year, but I already forgot. And I was wondering, maybe that was him.
No, plus he died.
Yeah, but he could have had his photo taken before he died.
Oh, I see what you mean. No, nothing really.
Because Guinan is long-lived, and she's known a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
You're right, but nothing triggered there for me. You could be right. Triggered there for me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. The whole episode is around the premise tied around this whole 5 years ago thing of Picard talking about
a bunch
of cadets.
None of whom grew up to be on the Titan, which I thought might happen.
And watching it the second time, it's like Picard's here just trying to eat his French fries or whatever it was. But he was reluctantly sharing stories. Suddenly we find out that at some point he fought a Hirogen alpha. Somehow that happened. And they even kind of like, how did that happen? Like, we don't know. We're not meant to know. It doesn't matter. This Delta Quadrant people find him. But the whole episode is him talking about reluctantly sharing stories to enjoying sharing stories to realizing Jack Crusher actually did try to find him at some point. And Picard was so caught up in the moment of this, how great Starfleet is, that he's sitting here and he tells this person he doesn't know Jack Crusher. Starfleet is the only family I did need. And then his cadets are all applauding. I'm like, man, JL, like, you let all this pride get to you. And I don't think that would have been his real answer. It didn't feel like his real answer. But he got caught up in the moment of all these cadets praising him.
You think that was pride?
Pride might be the right word, but it was, he was caught up in the moment. Is the mood I was trying to get across.
Do you think that in a different moment, Picard might have expressed regret about not having a family?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It didn't feel like his answer. It felt like the answer the cadets wanted to hear. That's what it felt like watching a second time. That was not what he would have said. What he would have said, I don't know, but that's what I felt.
But he had even told Beverly Crusher that he was afraid of growing up and becoming his own father. And so that's one of the reasons Beverly decided not to tell him that he was a father. I don't know if Picard wanted kids.
I didn't say that. Family doesn't have to be kids.
Okay.
I just mean, settle down. I mean, he's always chased after something. I don't know. Just the way he said it in that moment, it didn't feel authentic.
I do think he would have said something very different if he had known who he was speaking to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But also, I don't know how quickly I would admit regrets about my own life to a bunch of strangers, especially strangers who are admiring me, because clearly they're admiring me for a reason, and I don't want to discourage them, not necessarily for my own ego, although that could be a part of it, but because I don't want to tell people, oh, you think I'm so great? Don't grow up to be like me. I screwed everything up. You're admiring the wrong hero. Your taste in hero sucks, kids.
I think he would have answered. It sounds basically what he would have said, I think, 20 years later. Or maybe, 10 years later.
Maybe. But I don't know. I think what we saw at the end of All Good Things was him recognizing that the crew of the Enterprise was his family. When he sat down to play poker and he said, I should have done this a long time ago.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah. And so maybe he could have said the same thing he did to those cadets, but maybe just put it differently.
Yeah, the way he said it, whatever, when he was talking to, didn't know it was Jack, it just felt very much, pandering.
The fact that they applauded that line was weird, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your use of the word pandering seems very appropriate given their reaction. oh, well said, sir. Well said. I know, right? And also, those kids, they cannot take a social cue. He's like, right? Excuse me, but my dinner's getting cold. Excuse me, sir, when you fought the Hirogen. really? Did you not just hear me? Okay.
Then, order a drink, get some more food, and join me instead of if this is what we're doing.
Yeah, right? Why don't we all eat together? It's not like he can say, oh, dinner's on me, because, hey, it's the Federation, everything's free. just sit down, come on. So this was 5 years ago that Jack Crusher tried to find him. Do you think that... I think it seemed pretty obvious, but I just want a confidence check. That Picard recognized at the end of the episode that was Jack from his memory.
That's what it felt like they were implying.
Yeah, that's kind of weird that Picard was even thinking about that at that moment. Because I know we're seeing these two timelines being told in parallel, but I didn't take that to mean that Picard was thinking about that moment in parallel with what was happening with
him. Maybe you're focusing too hard on it. It's more like suddenly he's coming into terms in the last 20 minutes of real world in his universe time of being a father and thinking about times he thought about family.
Okay. So
maybe he wasn't thinking intricately every moment. And that was more for us. But to get that feeling of what he was that. All that was for us to help narrow down what he was thinking in those 4 seconds.
Have you read The Martian?
No, I didn't read it. I just watched it.
So that author did another book not too long ago called The Hail Mary Project.
Uh-huh. I heard lots of good things about it.
Yeah, I read it. And the main character, this is not too much of a spoiler because you find out in the first 2 chapters. The main character has amnesia. And his memories start coming back. And so you'll read a scene taking place now and then a scene that took place 10 years ago or whatever. And in those two timelines, the events are being told chronologically. So 10 years ago, 9 years ago, 8 years ago. But that's also the order in which the main character is remembering those things until it finally catches up to the present. And I love how linearly his memory comes back. It's like, oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, wow, that would be amazing.
That you're remembering things right when the readers need you to know them, basically. And so I kind of applied that same technique to this episode of Picard. Like, oh, things are happening in parallel, linearly. But you're right, they don't have to be. That's just because that's how we're seeing it.
This episode also great. Lots of great scenes. We've got, let's talk about the Changeling real quick. Seven and Shaw talking about Changeling and the Dominion War, because Seven wasn't here. She was in the Borg and the Delta Quadrant. Basically, all of Voyager took place during the Dominion War, for the most part. And so she was out there. But to talk about the buckets, which was a little weird. That bucket was a very Odo-specific bucket, but now apparently all Changelings have adapted that, unless that's a hint of things to come. But talking about the bucket was kind of interesting. They're talking about pot, and they want to steal their pot. And I don't think you mean cannabis, do you? He's like, no.
I wish. Yeah, and apparently Changelings leave behind residue.
Or Ken, he said. Sometimes they leave residue, a goo, residue. That was a fun line.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some very interesting moments with Shaw this episode, because
Shaw is a favorite captain.
Well, he barged in on 10-4. I mean, first of all the other people did too, but then he joined them and he said, hey, did your old man ever tell you about the time we first met? And I was like, oh no, is this what I think it is? Stardate 4400? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, crap, it is. Yep. Just like they did for Sisko, this guy was on the receiving end of the Fury of Locutus at the Battle of Wolf 359.
It was that moment was one of the best moments in Star Trek, I think. That was so, he was delivered so well.
It was delivered so well. The background sound effects of what he was living in his mind. Oh. Yes. And I read this neat article, I think on screenrant.com, about how This was an interaction with Picard that Sisko was denied, because Sisko, he just basically said, we've met before in battle. And then he just went ahead and had his meeting with Picard like nothing had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably what was going on inside Sisko, because his wife died at Wolf 359. I mean, this guy took his almost everything from him, this Picard. And I love that Shaw said, the only Borg so dangerous, so lethal, that they gave him a name. And I was like, you know, I've often wondered why he was the only Borg with a name. We don't know that that's actually the reason, but it's a great way to frame it.
Yeah, that's how he sees it, and that's just a beautiful way. And then his line at some point, when he shoot him off, basically, he's like, forgive me, at some point asshole became a substitute for charm.
Yeah,
and that's how but that kind of explains everything we've seen up to this point.
It explains what Vedic said about your psychological profile. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see that you're still functional. It explains why he was making all these ex-Borg references. It does not explain to me necessarily how he got an ex-Borg as his commander, given his history with the Borg, unless she was assigned to him.
Yeah. I mean, to our knowledge, usually the captain has some say on it, but maybe she was assigned to him.
Right. You would think that if this was up to Shaw, he would not have chosen this person. But
possibly.
Yeah. But imagine like Picard coming on in the first episode onto his ship on the Titan saying, we're here to do an inspection. And by the way, we want to change course. And also, by the way, I killed everybody on your ship except you. You know, I almost want to go back and rewatch the first episode to see their first meeting in this new context, because now I have better understanding of what it is Shaw did.
That dinner where he's already eaten his green steak.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily like Shaw anymore, but I do empathize with him now.
I found out that actor is an extreme geek. He was on Ready Room after that episode aired.
Okay.
And Todd, his name, he is an extreme geek. He has been on multiple D&D or tabletop streams, charity things. He posts pictures of his weekly game on Instagram. He is he was going to be one of the writers or head people for a recent Star Wars game that was canceled. He has a tattoo on his forearm It was in Arabish, the Star Wars language. It's Han Solo's quote, which when I took time to translate it, and it was him in A New Hope saying, "I don't know, I can imagine a lot," about reward money. He's a major geek, and he's been in lots of shows too. Like, I had no idea, and I'm like, how have I gone this long without knowing who this person is?
You're not the only one. You're in good company.
And Will Wheaton even asked him, like, how would you approach, because being a captain, you have to have some kind of presence on your bridge. I mean, and Will Wheaton's like, I can tell you are a fan of Star Trek. Like, you clearly, you do all the right things. You know the moves. You are a fan of Star Trek. And he's like, yeah, I was. And I was telling him, basically, he's like, my character Shaw, it's like, how is he going to act? How is he going to behave on the bridge? How does he even sit? How do you sit? And he approached it because his story to Picard about Wolf 359 talks about being a grease monkey. He was an engineering kid. So he basically is thinking of his life of the real actor actually did grow up. He was a dip from Chicago for real life too, which is a great line here that was used twice. But and he had like a mechanic in his family, father or uncle or something like that. Basically, he's like, how would a mechanic sit when you're captain? So that's how he approached his captain chair. He just, you know, legs spread, lean forward. Just like that was his vision of a grease monkey in the captain's chair. Right. Just fascinating.
And you know what made that line great was the fact that it was used twice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was totally forgettable the first time.
Oh, not for me.
But then to hear it come out of Picard's mouth, I loved that. And that reminds me that when you and I recorded the podcast episode about the season premiere, we were going over the details in the outro, trying to figure out how it was all going to come together. And I said, there was a starship listed in the outro. And I looked it up online and it had never been mentioned before this outro. So it's not a historical reference. It was the USS Constance. That proved to be Shaw's ship that was destroyed at Wolf 359. So I'm not surprised that it was random, but I'm surprised that we already talked about it.
This episode, yeah, that was Shaw did some amazing acting, and Todd here that was just a wonderful scene there, the holodeck. Plus, they also had some things here to quiet the community down, like why is the holodeck running when all power is gone?
They've talked about that on other Star Treks before, and I still don't necessarily find it okay. Usually what they say is it operates on a separate power system, and they just leave it at that. And I find that a little hard to believe, because really it's that incompatible. But now Picard said, because people need relief at times of stress. And I was like, okay, now I can kind of see why you might prioritize this system.
And then even Jack is like, can't believe it. Basically, I don't know why named me Jack. And it kind of, he talked about that too. And Picard's like, I would have done the same thing. That's about it. It's all we got, but sure.
But we have to talk about the elephant in the room. The hair.
The hair. I think the elephant is more like, why do I look like I'm 32 when I'm actually 20?
So that's actually the next thing I want to mention, which was I thought he was supposed to be like 18 to 20, because I thought it had been 20 years since they all saw Beverly Crusher. But in one of these episodes, in this episode, Jack Crusher said he's 24 years old. So I must have misremembered or misheard when Picard said, Beverly Crusher, I haven't talked to her in 20 years. Because
a lot of people around.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If it was somebody like that, I would be counting the years.
I mean, that's you, though. I mean...
Yeah, you always say that like it invalidates my experience. Other people do things that I do.
What I'm saying is, think of it from their point of view. I mean, I don't know. I haven't worked at Walmart in 17 years. I'd probably say 15, 20 years.
But the first thing you just told me was 17.
Yeah, because I just wanted to give you context. I've known you for 10 years, Ken.
Is that true?
Nope. it's been 2014, which is 9 years.
9 years. Uh-huh. 9 years.
That was the first PAX I went to. And look at us.
Oh, really?
Pedantic things on a Star Trek podcast.
Is that what podcasts are for?
Yes, pedantry.
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 My last partner told me that she wanted to get me a shirt that just said pedant. And unfortunately, that never came to be, because if it had, I would have worn it very, very proudly. And speaking of people who did great jobs this week, including Todd, our actor who played Captain Shaw, we neglected to mention about the previous episode, which continued into this episode, directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, it's right.
Yeah. And I think that you and I have come to expect great things when we see that name in the credits. And so maybe it just goes assumed when we get on the podcast that we don't have to talk about it, because of course it was awesome. But yeah, I remember there was an episode of TNG. I don't remember which one, but it opens up with Captain's log, blah, 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 blah. Number one is not on board this week because he's off at a conference. And then it says directed by Jonathan Frakes. Yeah, because you can't do two things at once. But now look at him this week. He's doing everything. He's on the show. Yeah. He's directing. Oh, he's wonderful. I love Jonathan Frakes so much.
He does a lot of really good work directing now, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the action ones. Too bad we didn't get to see the joystick.
From Nemesis?
Yeah.
I don't ever want to see that.
No, it was Insurrection when he used the joystick in the Briar Patch.
Oh, it was Insurrection. You're right. Yeah,
I love Shaw dressing down these two in the next episode.
Yes, we'll talk about that. Let's see. So this whole nebula thing, we haven't talked about that much. The first time they got hit by that wave, when LaForge says, "Captain, look," and they see the wave coming at them and the whole room gets bright. Like, my first thought was, is this going to energize the ship? And apparently, like, even though people in the audience may have thought of it immediately, nobody on board did. And Beverly Crusher, she's timing these contractions and she waits a really long time to share what she's doing with anybody. And when she does share it, she does not share it with Riker or Shaw. She shares it with Picard and Jack.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, the end result is fine. No complaint about that. Thank you for Beverly for coming up with the plan that saved us all. But couldn't you have brought other people in on your theory sooner?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't have much to add there. That's a lot of storytelling in Star Trek too, though, right? But, I mean, and because one of my notes is, oh my God, Jack actually told someone he has got a problem before like the next to the last episode. I mean.
But was there a TNG episode? What's the name of the blue alien race that has like a little breather in front of them? Are those Bolians?
The Bolians?
I think it's Bolian. So there was a transfer student and he like found some fungus growing on the hull.
Mordok.
And yeah, I think that was his name. And he didn't tell anybody until he thoroughly researched it, because he said, oh, that's how we do things on Bolia or whatever. And I feel like that's kind of like what Beverly Crusher did this week. Where she's like, I'm not going to tell anybody until I'm sure.
She knows it's one of those things where like she knows she's on a TV show and the dramatic moment hasn't come yet.
That's true. Now you're making me think of John Scalzi's red shirts.
I mean, unfortunately, that is storytelling. You are absolutely right. Like, some stories, the plot would be like, I'm going to propose this, and then we're going to research it. And other stories, it's, hey, I have this working theory. I've already put in the 36 hours of research. Here you go.
Right. I mean,
unfortunately, it's just inconsistent with its own universe. And I don't really have much more to add there.
Right, because she had to wait until everybody had lost hope to tell them, because otherwise it wouldn't be dramatic.
Uh-huh.
You know, like if Riker knew from the beginning that there might be a way out, he never would have had that moment trying to record something for Deanna.
Right.
Which was a great scene. So, yes, you need to let people think they're dying.
For that impact, though, wait. Yeah, I'm with you. But I'm glad it worked. And we got a little nod back to, they even mentioned Farpoint, and we got a little nod to Farpoint and Space Babies, too.
Yeah, I love that moment where Crusher said, let's do what we spent our whole lives being great at. Like, what a great callback to that show we watched for 7 years.
Mm-hmm. What a great callback to, what was it, Insurrection? Or was it Nemesis? Where, like, is it Picard makes that comment? Does anyone remember when we used to be explorers? it was Nemesis, because they were doing a first contact with people.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And,
So my mom and I, we have been watching TNG on and off for the last 7 years. She's never seen it before. Mm-hmm. And back in January, we watched the episode with Matt Frewer, who's a time traveler.
Yeah, burning
claiming
off.
To be, yeah, claiming to be from the future, sometime in season 5. And Picard is trying to get him to tell, like, So what happens to this planet? What action should I take to try to save them? I can either do nothing and let everybody slowly die, or I can try something and save them all or kill them all. And Rasputin refuses to help him. Picard finally is like, no, you did help me, because you helped me realize that I'm never one to not take a chance. And they strode out onto the bridge confidently and said, let's do this thing. And I kind of feel like that was the same thing this week. And I don't mean that to say they're recycling. I feel like this is consistent character. I like that they are taking a chance, because when you have nothing to lose or everything to lose, that's all the more reason to be confident in what you're doing and not just sit by and wait for the end. So I really liked that. This is the same crew. It may be 20 years. They've been through a lot and things do change, but they're still at their heart the crew that we love from the Enterprise D.
What's really interesting is how much this season is resonating with more people than one and two. I've seen that a lot. Even my mom, she started watching it. She's like, oh, I can see some more. And her text, it took me a minute to translate. She wrote, Jean-Luc Picard. Like, not trying to be funny. She just didn't know how to spell Jean-Luc.
Okay.
But once I translated, she's like, oh, she's watching Picard season three. And my mom said she's liking this one more. And I've seen the sentiment a lot. But, like, they're seeing Picard be more in the captain role instead of his life after Starfleet role. It's really resonating with a lot of people. I saw one comment saying, yeah, Patrick Stewart really seemed to figure out who Picard is this season. I'm like, they filmed this season literally the day after they finished filming season two. I think that was just a natural progression and a different story to see him in. But I don't think he ever lost him. I think it was just in a different situation.
Yeah, or in addition to that, it could also be a different scriptwriter or just different direction. It's certainly a different cast.
Yeah.
You know, and on one hand, it's kind of too bad that they spent the first couple of seasons building up all these characters like Elnor, for example, and now they're just gone and we don't care about them. It really was all about the TNG crew from the beginning, you know, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. We're getting a little long on the tooth here on no win scenario, yeah. But the one thing I got a kick out of, because our one scene that took place off of Titan was on Vadic's ship, the Shrike. And she cuts her hand off to talk to some space face thing. And this is also where Beverly figures out that... No, that was the next episode. But so she cuts her hand off to talk to space face thing. So there's no, go in there and basically kill yourself to go get Jack Crusher. And she's like, okay. No, do it. Okay. But they had such an insignificant part of this episode because the instant, like, all right, we're going to get them. Like, oh, whoa, the Titan is coming to us. Awesome. We don't have to go kill ourselves in the singularity, whatever. And then on the nebula, and then right on the Titan's, like, riding this wave. They don't think anything weird about this. Titan's coming at them. Like, all right, we're just going to point our ship at them. Who knows how this is going to turn out? And then Riker just throws an asteroid at them. Like, they were such an insignificant goofball part of this episode. Did you just throw an asteroid at them? Sure as hell did. Like, that was awesome moment. Damn right I did. But the Shrike and Vadic were such a useless part of this episode, other than to give us like 30 seconds of plot point to advance the rest of the story.
I'm okay with that. I feel like they had a lot of time in the previous episodes, and this was a moment for the crew of the Titan to
deal. It just felt useless.
I mean, I can see that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. I am curious about her liquid hand. Like, is her hand a changeling? What's going on? She must be the marked woman that those Fenris Rangers were reporting Jack Crusher to in that previous flashback.
That makes sense for Scar.
Right. Which implies that she is not a changeling. I just don't think you would call a changeling the marked woman.
Depends on her. I don't have a problem with that. If it's how she appears to everybody else.
Maybe they don't know she's a changeling. I don't know. But she is cutting her hand off right on the bridge.
Uh-huh.
Like, she's not even going to her private quarters. I did find it odd that the Titans, they were falling into the nebula at some point. It almost felt like they stopped falling. Like they were just hanging out in an asteroid field.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened to the gravity there. But yeah, the throwing the asteroid was taken right out of Galaxy Quest. Because when Tim Allen said, "And I'm towing mines," and then he throws a whole minefield at the bad guy, same thing. Except I felt like it was done so much better. And this, I mentioned there are several episodes this season that had me screaming. That was the moment that had me screaming. I was just like, F yes, because the Shrike, the Shrike totally outmaneuvered the Titan every chance that they had. Every encounter, the Shrike was outmaneuvering them. And finally, they got to do something back to the Shrike. And I'm surprised that asteroid didn't just totally obliterate them,
I know,
even
right?
with shields up. But it was just awesome. That is my last note about this episode.
The moment with LaForge's daughter in the engineering room was cool.
Oh, I forgot. Yes. Yes, we do need to mention that.
Yeah. Go for it.
What I liked was, I'm sure you appreciated this too, was when Shaw said to Seven, "How did you know she was a changeling?" And it wasn't just that Seven said, "Because LaForge always calls me Commander Seven." What I liked was that Seven said, "LaForge always calls me Commander Seven out of respect."
Yeah.
And what she was implying to me was, "Captain Shaw, I should shoot you right here for the way you treat me. Because for all I know, you're a changeling." But people who disrespect me, Captain Shaw, they get shot with a phaser, is what she's saying. And Shaw's like, "Point taken." Oh, yeah, that's it. That's right. Shall we move on?
Yeah, to Imposters, where
Shaw is a dick again.
Yep, Shaw is good old Shaw again, being a dick and calling him out. He's like, "I saw Star Trek," or "I saw All Good Things. I saw Star Trek Insurrection. I saw Generations."
Yep.
That was fun.
Yeah, and just see like, "Well, after everything we've been through, I'm going to let you three get your act together." And it's like, that didn't bond them at all, what they've all been through. Oh, well.
I had generally for watching the series, I've been watching, I've gone like, "Whoa, neat, cool." I tweeted this out. This week I went, holy, and what the hell? I didn't expect Ro Laren to show up.
Nobody did. No. You know what? Here's something funny. So remember how like you and I had watched Balance of Terror and then they redid it in Strange New Worlds? Like that synchronicity. Sometime in the last 6 months, like this has always been one of my favorite scenes in all of TNG, but sometime in the last 6 months, it just came back to my mind and I've started like rewatching this scene maybe like once a month. Mm-hmm. I'll just be out of the blue. I'll pull it up on YouTube. It's the episode where LaForge and Ro Laren are phased out of reality.
Yep. They don't fall through the ship for some reason.
And they attend their own funeral and they get seen as ghosts and Data puts it all together and brings them back. And I just watched that scene like once a month. And I just watched it 2 days before this episode. So when she showed up, I was like, is that Ro Laren? No, it can't be. And it was.
Yeah, Michelle Forbes came back after being on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And coming back here.
Yeah, what did you think of her?
I thought she was awesome. It was great to see her again. I think it was sad that they used her as a plot device and killed her immediately. But it was very cool to see her again and let her have that closure that I didn't know I needed with Picard.
Right? Yeah, it's too bad she died, but she died a warrior's death. And one thing that surprised me, I was going to say disappointed, but I think the better word is surprised, is there are Deep Space Nine Season 8 novels.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm sure you know, Ro Laren was originally supposed to be the Bajoran on Deep Space Nine, and they couldn't get Michelle Forbes, so they created the character of Nerisse. Well, in the Season 8 novels, Kira, of course, has been promoted to fill in for Captain Sisko, who's now off in the wormhole. So they need somebody who used to be in Kira's role, and they need somebody to fill in for Odo as chief of security. That's what it is. And they get Ro Laren.
Fascinating.
And Ro says, like, at one point, and Picard actually comes to visit her. and like, and basically wishes her luck in her new role. And what Rolaren doesn't know is that Picard wrote the letter of recommendation to get her out of prison.
Interesting.
After the Maquis were captured. So like Picard forgave her without telling her and did that for her to ensure her future success. And so I was surprised. I already had that relationship in mind. And then instead I see him be so angry and so bitter, which is believable, which is why in hindsight, I'm not disappointed. But, you know, Picard is somebody who always says, oh, humanity has evolved and we no longer hold grudges unless it's against the Borg. And
that's a whole Gene Roddenberry thing. They even Jonathan Frakes talked about that in a recent interview. He's like, that we realized after Gene died. That, I mean, we knew it, but when Gene died, we were allowed to actually have some conflict.
Yeah. Did TNG ever have internal conflict among its crew?
Nothing like DS9 is where they really felt safe doing that.
Yeah, I can see that. That was the first Star Trek made entirely without Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah. But no, I mean, also with the hindsight of we had 30 years after Ro in real world, and where season 8 was just trying to pick up, you know, like right afterwards. So it gave time, it gave, having it this way kind of gives more weight to the time that has passed since, like, you know, season 8 DS9 in the relaunch novels is, you know, so soon.
Sure.
Or started so soon after.
Yeah, it was 20 plus years ago. Yeah. I'm not being very specific because it's not that important to me. What did you think of their scene in 10 Forward?
That's the whole thing right now. I think it's a closure I didn't know we needed.
Yeah, yeah.
It was emotional.
Yeah. When Picard said, "You broke my heart," like, that was powerful. And also was Rolaren saying that Picard confuses duty with morality. And I think there's some truth to that. Certainly there have been times when Picard has broken the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But he is very much a product of the Federation and of Starfleet.
Absolutely. I mean, how many times do we have him give some huge speech about the Federation and all it's, what it stands for?
Yeah. And that's what Star Trek is. It's, you know, people pontificating. But after that scene, when they broke to commercial, like right after that scene, and again, I don't know what's going on with me, but I had to pause and I just like, I ugly cried because, and I don't mean just like a single tear down my cheek.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like I was messed up because there was so much tension and like, I don't know if it was that I don't like seeing mom and dad fight, or maybe it was just because there was closure, like you said, or maybe it was because it was so real and so vulnerable that they were both hurt.
Yeah.
You know, they were both hurting. This wasn't just one person betrayed the other. And then, you know, they came back from commercial and I pulled myself together. And then Michelle Forbes is the one crying.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, this is hard.
I mean, up until then, I was still like, what is her game here? Like, I still wasn't sure. I mean, I suspected it was a real person or Ro was real, not a changeling. But up until this point is what convinced.
When Picard noticed the missing earring, I was like, oh, she's a changeling.
That wasn't totally intentional to try to get us to think that.
Yeah, especially because it was at that moment that he got his medical results from Dr. Crusher.
Mm-hmm. Where we find these changelings will also answer your question about why would that changeling hold form for so long in the fight with Worf. These changelings are different.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? That is answering some other concerns I had, because I tend to think of a changeling as almost being like the T-1000.
Uh-huh.
Like just so incredibly lethal. Like they just turn their hand into a knife and they plunge it into your chest and you're dead. Boom. And here we saw Jack Crusher take out 4 of them.
Mm-hmm. Which is something, I think that's something else here. We can talk about that Jack in a second here. I think that is related. These evolved changelings, I feel like that also answers, because everyone keeps referring to them as goo, they look like meat wads of bone and muscle when they form. Like, I think that's the difference. I think if these were the changelings we know, they would still be jelly.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like, in some ways, the show Voyager defanged the Borg by making them so commonplace. Like, one Borg cube, like Captain Shaw said, took out so many starships. Whereas on Voyager, like, oh, quantum torpedo, boom, all the cubes are dead. And I feel like on this episode, on this show, I was feeling like they were doing the same thing with the Changelings. Like, oh, one is deadly, but here's Jack Crusher taking out four of them. But now we're understanding that they are actually, in some ways, very different from the other Changelings. They're more able to infiltrate, but perhaps less able to morph.
We'll see, they have something different about them. Don't forget, especially including the Jack thing you brought up again. They have organs, or they can replicate organs. They don't have DNA, but they can bleed. There is something different about them just completely.
But they're not a new species. It's just evolution.
And then the Jack thing, like, he didn't just take them out. There was some kind of weird change in him.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, I don't think taking out four is a normal human feat. Something is very wrong with Jack here. He's seen, and so apparently he has innate super intersect powers. It's like nodding back to Chuck here, sensing these changelings. He said he didn't know they were changelings, but something tells me he somehow sensed they were.
Well, this is kind of like in the first season of Picard, where there are these android girls who just suddenly flip a switch and now they're deadly and lethal.
They're doing that exact thing again, but I don't think that. But also, Jack, he's got some kind of connection with changelings.
And do you have any ideas what that might be?
I don't have my own. I have internet hypotheses. But before I mention up the internet hypothesis, something feels up with the transporters. When he went to go watch those people beam away, he was getting some really weird visions there. And also the voices we keep seeing, find me and connect us. Yeah. Who? Is it the Great Link? Is it just a mini link? I don't know. Is it Minish Cap? I don't know.
yeah.
Is he somehow, like, it sounds like he was, you know, like, was born human to Beverly. Doesn't mean that something didn't happen along the way that he does not know.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. A theory that I came up with and then dismissed was that Jack is a changeling and doesn't know it.
Uh-huh.
Because we had on TNG a Q on board who didn't know she was a Q.
Mm-hmm.
So these sorts of things can happen. But it goes back to Beverly being his mom. How could he be something that he doesn't know that he is?
Mm-hmm.
Without her knowing.
Yeah.
And granted, on Discovery, we had a human who didn't know he was a Klingon.
Yeah.
So who knows?
It's one of those, like, we are not meant to know yet, but it sure is weird, huh? Oh, he just activates here all of a sudden.
Yeah, and whatever it is that makes him different, it's something that the changelings recognize and want.
Yeah.
And somehow ties into what they stole from Daystrom.
Uh-huh. Is he some kind of, like, maybe is Vadic a full changeling or only part changeling? Is Jack part changeling and doesn't know it? But is mostly human? I mean, I guess we'll see.
I think Jack, on some level, knew that those four people were changelings.
Whether he was aware is not.
Yeah, I don't think he's the threat that he thinks he is.
Mm-hmm.
I am, just now, as we're speaking, recalling that at the end of DS9, as part of the truce that ended the Dominion War, the so-called female changeling turned herself over to Starfleet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happened to her after that. Like, no, we don't know. We don't know if she's in prison somewhere. Could she be what was stolen from Daystrom? I doubt it, because Daystrom doesn't work on people. They work on computers and robots.
Right.
And it probably doesn't come back to that, but I don't know. Maybe they're trying to rescue her.
Maybe.
Maybe it
is her calling. I mean, it could be.
I mean, I don't think it's likely. I'm just throwing stuff out there.
At this point, when you get Roll Aaron back...
Right. Anything is possible. One more thing I just remembered. So we, yeah, I know it's Columbo. We saw four changelings, as we just mentioned. Jack killed them all. Has there ever been a time that we have seen more than two changelings in humanoid form at a time?
Maybe in the Homefront episode where we find out Starfleet is taking over more there. Top of my head, I don't recall, but it's possible. But besides the Great Link.
Yeah, that's why I say in humanoid form.
Yeah, yeah. Possible, I just can't think of the top of my head.
Yeah, that's another reason why I was so surprised that there were four who were just taken out so easily, because we've only ever needed one to start a war and maintain it.
Yeah, so...
By the way, Daystrom is protected by AI.
Yeah, I know. Why do they keep going back to this well?
Like, unless we're talking about ChatGPT, they really need to stop using AI.
Like we've already found this out in Discovery, first season Picard. Lower Decks.
Second season Lower Decks.
Like Lower Decks. Like I was joking with Char. Like they're gonna go and find all these evil computer lab, and that's what they're breaking into is getting the evil bots.
The Jeffrey Combs bot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no.
The CBS bot. Peanut Hamper.
Peanut Hamper.
Yeah. My hypothesis about what's on Daystrom is still sitting on Twitter in a Rot 13.
Okay.
We'll see how close it is.
I'll have to go back to that eventually.
Yes, I will tell you when it's safe to go to that.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I appreciate that.
Because it does involve something that was in the previews.
Oh, okay. Which I still haven't seen.
Correct. Not that you would know that, but to you it sound like, wow, Bree is talking jargon again. which is a common thread, most people think. people online were suspecting with Jack and the changelings, something, Paw Wraiths?
No.
Because their hint was the red eye thing that happened to him.
Right.
And like Jake Sisko when he was captured.
And to Gul Dukat.
And to Gul Dukat, yeah. And like, maybe? But I feel like we'd have more DS9 characters at this point. It's possible. I can't count it out 100%, but it doesn't feel like that.
At this point, anything is possible.
Yeah. I mean, it could be the burn. I mean, happening, you know, like whatever, you know, like.
It's at one point, obviously. You even theorized it could be the red matter from the 2009 movie.
Yeah, so something red matter, even though it's already happened?
It could be something new.
Yeah, it could be something new. Like, Paw Race, I can't eliminate it, but it doesn't feel like it yet in five episodes in.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
But there's still five episodes left or whatever? Six, eight, whatever it is?
We're exactly halfway through the season now.
Okay, so it's possible. It's possible. Worf and Raffi, I saw the hollow emitter right away. Or the mobile emitter.
I didn't.
I saw like, is that on her? That is. And then shoot it a minute later.
I wasn't surprised that they had something up their sleeves. I just didn't know that's what it was going to be.
Didn't catch it. But they were fun.
I almost feel like Worf is being played for comedic effect this season.
You know, Worf is always the punch guy. I mean, every time you wanted to, he was always, he's been the humor a lot, but you're not wrong either.
Yeah.
You're a Klingon warrior who's not warrioring. You are kind of a comedic thing.
Yeah, when they killed him this episode, when Raffi stabbed him, I didn't think he was actually dead, but I did allow for the possibility because every now and then important characters die. You know, that's how you establish what a real threat is. But for him to die at the hands of some Vulcan scum, that didn't seem fitting a warrior. And also, I feel like the longer the season goes on without the characters all reuniting, the more concerned I get that they're not going to. That they're just going to, like, Deanna's just going to appear on screens to talk to Riker. And I worried that they might actually kill Worf before he gets to see anybody. But fortunately, he did get to talk to Picard and Riker at the end.
Yeah, for him at the very end. I don't know. I'm with you. I don't want to see Worf die that way. But to have someone important just die to a meaningless death is a common trope. It even happened in Doctor Who. Poor Seventh Doctor. He just shows up in 80s or 90s Earth, steps out of the TARDIS, and is immediately shot by gangsters.
Oh, I think you're talking about the made-for-TV movie that aired back in 96.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just a pointless death. I felt so bad for that actor. But yeah, that's sometimes you have pointless deaths to make their deaths seem even harder. But I didn't really think Worf was going to die here, though, either.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad he didn't. And I'm glad that the Vulcan decided that telling them everything he knew was logical.
I love evil Vulcans. We had one on DS9. We had Valeris, Kim Cattrall. We have this one.
Evil Kim Cattrall.
And anyway. We had the one who was fighting Sisko in the baseball game. No. But no, I love an evil Vulcan and the way they twist logic. It's not even a twist. Using logic still just shows you not all logic is necessarily good logic.
No. Logic does not return just one result.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that when they do that with Vulcans. Yeah.
When Worf was trying to figure out who to talk to next and he settled on this Ferengi, that Vulcan was one of four names on the screen and we knew the other three.
Yeah, there's Morn was one.
Morn of Loria.
Brunt
of Ferenginar. And Thadian Okona.
Oh, yes, that's Okona, yes.
And I was kind of hoping, like, please pick anybody else. Anybody that we know. Don't pick some random Vulcan that we've never heard of. I want to see more TNG characters.
But, I mean, Morn would have been worse because he wouldn't say anything.
But that's just the thing. Like, he's such a talker and we never get to see it. But I was surprised.
Apparently both Sneed, the guy who played Sneed and the guy who played Trin here, whatever, were both on the show 12 Monkeys.
Oh.
Under the guy Metellus who's running Picard here.
Huh.
And so he brought some people back.
And at one point, Worf is talking to people. He's like, we're the ones who killed Sneed of Ferengi.
Yeah.
And I was like, Ferengi?
I don't know.
What's Ferengi?
I mean, it's almost like people always say like Kronos thing in Klingon.
Yeah. Or whatever. From the planet
Klingonese.
Right. But Ferengi sounds like merengue.
Yeah.
Like, do Ferengi have their own music? What is this? It was just weird that he said that. Kind of like on Lower Decks when they made fun of the word sensors.
Sensors.
Like, come on, nobody says sensors.
Oh, that was fun. I like that little scene here. It's like the interrogations. He's going on this whole spiel. It's like, so basically the whole idea being, let's hurry this up. I need medical attention.
Yeah, I liked when he cut himself off. Like, I've mastered the art of, I've lost a lot of blood. That's what I mean by comedic effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's done the comedy a lot this season already in his few amount of scenes. And now we've connected him back to Picard and Riker right at the end of the episode.
Yeah, his handler was Ro Laren.
Mm-hmm. And he knew.
Yes, he knew who his handler was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so she's the one who said, seek another route. So she knew that the decision to not go to Daystrom came from higher up. And she said, you should pursue anyway.
We get Picard going once again to Shaw saying, you need to steal this ship. And he's like, what? And then Ro had to die. So Shaw saw, oh, you're right. Crap.
And that's also kind of why the other ship, what was the name of the other ship?
That was the Intrepid.
The Intrepid, mm-hmm. That's right. That's also kind of why the Intrepid didn't put its shields up when Ro did her suicide run, because that would make it harder to frame the Titan. Like, mm-hmm. Why would you put the shields up to prevent your own crewmen from shuttling back in?
Yeah.
You know, if that's on record, they'd be like, did you know she was going to do that? How could you have known she was going to do that unless you arranged it? Because at first I found that unbelievable. And then I was like, oh, wait, that kind of makes sense. It's weird that when a nacelle gets hit in space, the ship lists.
That was that angry warp nacelle on that Intrepid looks so cool.
And especially, as it starts to level back out and it's angry, it's an angry ship. Cool. Yeah, it made no scientific sense, but it was great cinematic effect.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was so good.
No complaints about that. It was an angry ship.
Frontier Day, the entire fleet?
Right.
What?
Why not?
Okay, sure. Okay, we need to recall everyone back from Deep Space. Recall everyone from Delta Quadrant. We got to get back here and have all our ships in one spot, which is a very good plan.
Got to have a parade.
Which makes no sense. We got to make sure our borders are unprotected.
Yep.
Get everyone here. And also, Starfleet infected again. Yep. Apparently it's... no, I'm not going to say anything. But Bluegill's back? I mean...
Is what now?
The Bluegills, the conspiracy aliens from season one.
Is that what they're called?
Uncanonically.
Oh, okay. Because DS9 season 8 had a great arc with them.
That's right. We talked about this before. But like, and they keep saying Janeway's name. Yep. Gotta have Kate Mulgrew on here one of these days.
Eventually, yeah. One more thing about the Intrepid. When the Intrepid arrived, so you know how when a ship is preparing to warp, you can hear the engines thrumming and then they warp. It was just the opposite when the Intrepid arrived. You could hear it before you saw it. I actually rewound it. I was like, because I said to myself, oh, a ship's going to appear. And then it did. And I was like, wait, how did I know that? So I rewound it and I listened. I was like, you can hear that makes no sense. That the sound of... Because warp engines are faster than light. How can the sound of the warp engine be faster than that?
Well, it's subspace sound. You're absolutely right. But then we also hear things in space, so...
Yeah, and just like how the nacelle was on fire, which requires oxygen.
Well, it might have been space fire.
Oh, space fire. You know, it consumes space oxygen.
Uh-huh. I mean, it might have been... lots of times they have the nacelles just... and spewing out crap. That doesn't necessarily mean fire, but it's fire.
Yeah. With plasma or whatever.
Yeah. So. And of course... The ships didn't do the thing, viewer who can't see me. The ships are angled. Like,
yeah.
There's a great comedy bit.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
No, you're angled. What do you mean? We're angled.
Jiro, beam me over here. I'll show you what I mean. those are my notes.
I have two minor notes. One is I love that they're using Worf's Klingon theme song whenever he shows up.
That was so cool.
And secondly, I notice only starting in this episode, Beverly is wearing a Starfleet uniform.
She put one back on. Or at least her robe anyway. Her blue robe, wasn't it?
I think it was more than a robe. I think it was like the silver and blue uniform with a comm badge.
Maybe she put one on now.
But she's not Starfleet. Is she retired?
Because I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, wait. I did have one more note.
Let's hear it.
Raffi to Worf. Can you not put holes in the floor every time you need to make a point?
I mean, literally, he's making a point.
Literally, yes.
But yeah, I liked this episode. I liked the previous episode even more. But to your point, I like that Jack finally said something about his state of mind. I don't think he's a changeling because somebody would notice if he turned into a pile of goo every time he goes to sleep. But there's still...
Yeah.
The one thread that I don't feel like has been resolved yet is in the very first episode, Beverly Crusher calls Picard and says, don't trust anybody. So the first thing he does is he goes to have drinks with Riker in 10 forward. And when they leave, somebody drops a little Enterprise in a glass and then follows them out.
Must have been a changeling spy, something. But you're right. It's a total. We have not seen anything beyond that. Other than now in later on, we know that changelings are everywhere again.
Right. But they must have known that Jack Crusher is Picard's son.
Uh-huh.
Because why else would they be following him? They're not following other retired admirals.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's a total thread that's just been dangling still.
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't necessarily... It might not be something that needs a conclusive ending. It can just be enough to say, hey, people are suspicious. That's fine. But yeah, that's all I got. I love this season. I'm having such a great time. I look forward to every Thursday. Speaking of which, you and I need to figure out when our next recording session is because I have some travel coming up, which might make challenging recording times. So maybe we're going to have some guests doing some substitutions.
Right on.
But we'll figure it out. We'll keep the show going. Anything else?
Frontier Day makes no sense. But until then, that's all I got.
You're right, it does not, but we are going to go ahead anyway, despite the threat from terrorists. Until then.
Changeling terrorists. Until then. hit it.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes and keep your hailing frequencies open by following us on Twitter at TransporterLock or subscribing to our podcast and email newsletter at TransporterLock.com.